I would like to welcome you back to The Outcast, a journey of believing, becoming, and belonging. Today we have a special guest with us to ask me some questions. Like I said before, we're going to do this episode more surround around some of the questions that you guys may have pertaining to my life story. Let me introduce you to my stepmom. I call her Mothership. Say hello to the people.
Hey.
So, I'm just going to allow her to ask me some questions. Some questions that each and every one of you has sent in. And I'm sure she has some questions herself. So, we'll just go from there.
I tend to be the most inquisitive person in your world, and tell me this and tell me that, and I always have 100 questions, but that kind of comes with the role at the same time.
Well, here goes your opportunity to ask all the questions that you want. So, all right, well, let's get started. What's the first question we got?
Okay, so, you know, after listening to this podcast, we're all just, I just want to say that we're all so proud of you for taking this journey, and, you know, as being on the other side as a step parent and or even your dad, or I'm sure your mom, as a parent, it's a beautiful thing to watch your children evolve into now you're a grown man, and I've known you since you were a teenager, but it's just been a very beautiful process to watch. So,
thank you.
Yeah. With that being said, I just wanted to touch on, as I'm listening to you in these podcasts, I'm of course asking myself 100 questions, and I know it's hard when you're in a room talking to yourself into a mic for you to miss the details of certain things that, of course, I want to know, people want to know, so we're going to dive into that.
Let's go ahead and dive all the way in. Right.
So I just wanted to touch more a little bit with you on the development of this podcast. Why or where, I guess, did the tagline come, believing, becoming, and belonging? Was that developed, or did it arise from just how you felt from your stages of life, like from childhood to adulthood? And kind of take me through that. Like, how did you believe? How did you become? And how are you now belonging?
So, if I'm being honest, the name, I was just looking up, not so much looking up. I was just like trying to figure out what the name of it was going to be. And I felt like my life has been a journey like everyone else's. And at first, I just was like, let me just call it the journey, or like my journey. And like I've said before, the creative mind behind my podcast, Megan, my girlfriend, is who I turn to.
Hey, Megan.
Is who I turn
we
to.
Love Megan.
Yes, it is who I turn to for the creative side of things. So when I was thinking about it, so I asked her what she thought, and she came up with those words to put in the name of the podcast. And when she texted it to me, I was like, you know, actually, it's because I was talking about the me feeling like there were times where I didn't know where I belong. Mm-hmm. There were times where I just was like, I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I'm like in the middle of nothing. So I wanted belonging to be part of it. And I know there are a lot of other people that may feel like they don't belong in certain areas of life and certain spaces. So I just was like, for that. And I want everyone that's listening to the podcast to have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Feel like they have a purpose. So becoming, what do you want to become? And
I think that's everybody's life goal. We
and
still
to
don't
become
know.
Exactly. And to become that. To become something, you have to believe in yourself. Mm-hmm. So, believing, becoming, and belonging.
Well, you guys made a great choice. I
love
the tagline.
And shout out to the Megan.
Yes, yes. Beautiful. Okay, so then as we're listening to your initial episode, and you're talking about being a young child in Haiti, for many of us that have never visited Haiti, I know I've never been to Haiti. I'm sure some of your listeners haven't as either. So take us a little bit more back through the main differences between Haitian culture and American culture. I know that in regards to just family ties. I know you said at one point in time you were from at your aunt's house, and you were at your friend's house, and you were at your sibling's house, and it leads me to believe that things are way different, because I'm picturing you, right, as this little boy, maybe 4 or 5 year old boy, walking the streets, going down to auntie's house with no supervision, and the parental side of me is like, what? Where was your parents, you know, or your siblings? And so it's scary to think, but I guess things are running a little different in Haiti. So just kind of, you know, talk about that.
Before I do. I think it just... It just was more so because of the way, it wasn't even so much a culture thing, I think, but because of the way my family was, because of the way my life was, because of the fact that, like, the people were not around as much. I did a lot of things for whenever I wanted to by myself.
You mean just having an age gap and having a lot of siblings and moving
pieces? Yes. Yeah, so it was like being, like, the last child at later on and being, like, the only one left, you... It's just, there was like such a different structure than it is here. And here, I mean, I guess you can't just go anywhere without telling your parents. You can't just go and do whatever you want without telling your parents. I know. But because of everywhere was walking distance and everyone knew everybody where I lived, it just made it, I think that's why it was like a lot easier to just go ahead and just basically live freely and go to my aunt's house. My aunt's house wasn't that far from my dad's house. It was like just, you know, probably 2 minutes down the road. So everyone was walking distance and there was no cell phone. So if you get lost, you get lost. So, and if my dad needed me or my sibling needed me, they couldn't find me until I came home. So I think the fact that the culture was so different, and it's just, there wasn't really much of a similarity to me. And there just was pertaining to like the family ties. There wasn't, like we were just talking about, there was like, we didn't have pictures around or things like that. There was no...
Not to say that they didn't value family.
No,
they
it's just...
They didn't display, they knew that everybody was connected.
Right, and I think it's not even the fact that it wasn't displayed, it's the fact that we didn't have those. It wasn't like you go somewhere... Yeah, it wasn't like you went somewhere to like professionally take pictures. Nobody, unless you really felt like you needed to, you didn't really care.
Touched on that with not having a picture of your mother and things like that.
So it just, there was like a lot of things that just was so different. It was like a completely different world to me coming here. Mm-hmm. So
it kind of goes along, you know, we have that saying where it really takes a village to raise children.
Yes.
And that's
really what it was. Basically what it was, because you were at so many places that, because once you become friends with kids in the same neighborhood, you eat at their house, they eat at your house. Mm-hmm. You go, you know, you spend a lot of time together, you play together, you do everything together. So it just becomes, everybody in that same town and village became one big family.
So
in a way,
there was no Xbox.
No, there was no Xbox. There was no video games.
Right.
Yeah, so I think like I was always outside, and I have the scars to prove it. My big toes like split in half from playing soccer barefooted. So mm-hmm. It was just like everything was different, and I will never go back and say I wish, because everything I've been through made me who I was. Mm-hmm. Or who I am to this day.
You're very active. So, you like to be outside.
So that just mm-hmm. all stemmed from me playing sports since I was so young and just always. I used to get in trouble for actually staying out too late because I was always playing with my friends.
Didn't want to come inside.
No.
Wow.
So that was like a big change and a big difference for me when I came here and just seeing like just how different everything was. And it was like, people play video games? Oh, shoot. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
So it just, everything was a change.
It's definitely a different, there's different entertainment here versus
yes.
over there. I think.
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
That keeps you a little, I think it's distracting, but I think it's great that I think you will see the benefits of that with your own children someday and make them be outside. Hopefully.
Oh, they're going to be outside.
Yeah. okay, so moving kind of a little forward, you took us through the death of your mother. I know I was moved by that story. I can't imagine being a little boy going through that. So, and I'm thinking as you're going through that and you're telling me then about your younger brother and your father. And then all of a sudden, here you go off to this church in town to go hang out with your friends. I'm assuming, I guess, were some of those friends the some of the other children that were adopted that you, that led you to this church, or were these?
No. Yeah. So I made a lot of the people I was actually friends with were not, like, they didn't even go there with me.
They didn't go to orphanage.
They were just like around. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even, honestly, like, the kids that got adopted, and even the kids that were, like, all the kids that was in the orphanage, I don't remember knowing any of them. So, like, I didn't meet everybody until we got in the orphanage. So, even though we were in the same area, they were in a whole different side of town. Bellany's going to tell you that he knew me, but I don't believe him.
So, it's kind of like you not only, it's not even as though you took a friend with you to this journey. It was just you.
It was me.
And you, even your relationships with these kids in the orphanage, you had to build from the ground up.
Yes, and I feel like it just stemmed from everything else. My life had been built on, I walk alone. And I think it's as bad as it may sound, because some people be like, I feel bad. But I think it's just, I've grown so much from learning so much about myself. And I'm still learning a lot about myself because of this podcast. But I think because I've always been a, like, get it done until the next thing, because I've just survival. That's just how I've always been.
Do you feel like new memories resurface as you're going through this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, very much. There's like so many times where I just was like, I would be talking, because I don't actually write a script. I just start talking and I get to a point. I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop here when I get to that point. But I'll just be talking. I'm like, oh, shoot, this happened. So a lot of the things I tell you on this podcast are actually things that I remember as I'm talking about them myself.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I guess when you got to the church, what kind of activities did you do there? I know that once you got to the orphanage, you said you would do some singing, and that's where that all evolved. Mm-hmm. But when you were at the church first, did you play soccer all day? Did you go through and learn the scripture? Like, because you had talked about voodoo being, their religious belief over there. What was it like that all of a sudden you're practicing this whole different, Christianity in that setting? And what kind of activities did you do?
So voodoo is not like everybody's religion, mm-hmm. but like some people go that way. Just like here, you got all these different beliefs and all that. But it wasn't even so much. I didn't really know anything about Christianity, so I wasn't really practicing anything. It was more so I was just there, just spending time with those people. Like, and they were always working, so I was just around working, like helping out.
You say working, like
working is building the orphanage, okay. Like, so everything they were doing, and they were just walking around, like helping families out. So they were always there to help and make, life better there for the people there. But I was always just going with the flow. I didn't understand as much as to what was going on, because I was so young, I still can't recall a lot of things that happened pertaining to what did we do every day? What did we not do? So it just, I didn't really.
So it wasn't a real process. It was just a place for you. I was just there.
Hang out, spend time with people that, that had
building
more
relationships.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, okay. In my head, I'm trying to think, okay, is a church gathering place next to the orphanage they're building? Like, you're trying to visually see what you're seeing.
Yeah, so the church wasn't right next to it. You actually, if you had to walk to where the orphanage was, it was a long, long walk. Mm-hmm. So they would actually drive there.
Okay.
So it was like further away. So we moved quite a ways from our parents once we moved. But because of where I was from in Perth, we actually walked everywhere. So it could take you almost an hour to walk from where we were to walk to back to church and all that kind of stuff. So it just, we would walk everywhere. Walking was our transportation.
With no permission from parents. Listen. Telling you
know
where you're at.
Nah. It depends on where you're going, but you still tell them though. See, that's the thing. It's like, we could leave. You would let them know, I'm going here, I'm going there. But, and be like, okay. Or even like for me, per se, the only parent I had was my dad, and when he wasn't around, what was I doing? I was just doing my own thing.
Right.
So, like, at the end of the day, I got to care for myself.
That's crazy. Okay, so, and this kind of bounces off to another question that was posted, but one I had down here. Talk to us a little bit about any contact that you've had with your family that's maybe still in Haiti or extended family in Haiti, or if you have any contact with them at this point.
So when I first got here, I used to talk to my dad a good amount. My parents would make sure that I was able to get in contact with him and talk to him. But as time goes, it's like started fading. And the other thing about it is everybody in Haiti always got like 2-3 phones, or like it's not like it's the cell service here. You don't have the same number forever. It's like you could change Sam's card the next day because you need it, and you need minutes to talk on your phone. So like you could go and buy a card with like 5 minutes or 10 minutes on it for however much, and when you run out of minutes, that's it. So people would switch phones and switch numbers many times over. So early on when I first got here, I did have contact with him, and I would talk to my dad a good amount. But as time went, like contact started fading. Then I would get in contact with my siblings here and there. Then it started fading some more. So
why do you think that it faded? Just because of your busy schedule or his busy schedule or the time difference?
I think it was more so once you lose a number, it's hard to get to find someone else, because I don't really know. I didn't really have anybody else I can call to get their number. So once you lose their number, it's like, good, hopefully you find them again. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I guess they started finding out about Facebook. So I would start to get Facebook friend requests and all that. And I'd start talking to them that way.
But that's not even a regular thing, because you're sure trying to get to the internet.
Exactly. So it was more so things just happened and things just went. And it just changed over time. And until last time, it's been a while since I've talked to my dad.
And what about your siblings?
Haven't really talked to that many of them. I had a sister I was in contact with, but I haven't talked to her in a couple months. But I think I have my own personal battles.
Do you think they would recognize you now?
I think they would, because I still look the same. Mm-hmm. But I think I have my own personal battle with them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's also
journey,
what,
right?
Yeah, and I think that's also what is, that's always holding me back from redefining ways, and because I know, I'm sure there are ways
to. Do you think that there's maybe some animosity from some of them for your success over here, or wondering, what do you think? I guess this is part of it, and maybe this is part of the restrictions as to why you don't reach out. What are your hesitations, and why is that? Do you feel like to them, maybe now you're the outcast, as we're talking
about
outcasts?
Yes, in a way. But I think the one thing that if anybody knows any Haitians is once you come to the States, I know it's not just Haitians. There's most people that are in foreign countries where they don't have as much. Mm-hmm. Once you go to the States, everybody thinks you have money. Yeah. And when you
they
don't,
think you're a superstar.
They think you're rich. And I'm like, I'm over here struggling too, man. It's just a different struggle.
Don't get it twisted.
But once you start to, and I used to just send money over there. When I first started working, I would just send money whenever I had it. And then it just became, okay, I don't have as much. I can't send as much. And it just felt as if I knew. And I always had this, put this pressure on myself and to help my family. And I always thought, whenever I make it, I don't even know what making it looks like, would I need to send money back and send money back. And then it just got to a point where I was like, I have bills to pay and I have all these things. So I can't just be.
You have to make it first.
I have to make it first. So, but they don't really understand that. And because of where they are and where I'm at, they think that it is all glitz and glamour over here. So, then that would just have some resentment, and there was some stuff that just was said that didn't sit well with me. Mm-hmm. But then also I have my own personal battle. I'm okay with saying this on here, but because I've been going to therapy, which has been helping me a lot, I think I had a lot of issues with my siblings because I felt like they left me. Mm-hmm. And still to this day I do. So I think that's the biggest thing.
They didn't uphold that promise your mama asked them to keep.
Yeah. And I just felt like I was the youngest and everybody just abandoned me and mm-hmm. allowed me. Basically, I forced me to have to grow up so quickly and figure life out by myself at an early age. So that is something I'm working on. That is something I'm working on and trying to be better at, because I know it's not all their fault, but at the same time,
that's gonna be a lot. It's a big ask to put on any child, whether what age your siblings were.
Yeah,
so
I know I have to figure that part out myself, but that's the biggest thing for me, and I think that's the biggest reason why is too sometimes why I don't care to talk to them.
Well, maybe that'll be your next podcast. Our reconnection podcast.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
So, touching on that though, just a little bit further in, have you been back to Haiti, or do you plan on going back to Haiti?
I've not been back, and yes, I do plan on going back. I had this thing in my head before a couple years back when I've been wanting to go back so bad. I always told myself I'm not going back unless I have money to and stuff to leave them with, and I just felt like I was never at that place. And I think that's why I never made as much of an effort to go back, because I felt like I was in a place. I was just going back just for them to see me. I wanted to go back with money and all that stuff to give to them for them to be in a better place.
Kind of justify your choice.
Yeah. So that's been my biggest, thing that's been holding me back. But yes, I do plan on going back, and I do have plans to do a lot of things in Haiti. Pertaining to humanitarian helping others. So, yeah.
Well, great. And we're going to touch on that too, because I know there's a couple questions from some of the viewers in regards to that and how to be part of the outreach.
Yes, yes.
As we're moving through the orphanage, the church and the orphanage situation, I know you mentioned a couple people, and I know you spoke very highly of Nadia and her voice and her singing and just her all-around care, I feel like, over you kids. Have you heard from her? Do you know where she's at to this day? And what was it about her that touched you so? Was it her voice? Was it her connection?
I have not heard from her since we left, and I don't even think she went back to Haiti. I think she found a way to stay, and whatever happened. But when I first came here, I did get in contact with her once, and then that was it. We talked for a little bit. I think it was over Facebook, and since then I haven't been able to find her. But I think what touched me about her was she was very much like a mother to 10 of us. And she was the only grown woman. So it was at the group that came with us, it was her and two other guys. And she was a grown woman, and she had to take care of all of us kids. And there was three girls in the group, so she had to do their hair, make sure. So I've just always been keen by just mother figures. So I think I know that that stems from me losing my mom really early on, but just mother figures just have such a a very special place in my heart. So her voice really did excite me. But I think just her mother figure wise coming towards each and every one of us is what made me.
And you're still in the process of trying to track down some of those videos and stuff.
I've been trying for a while, and I've not really had much luck.
Maybe somebody will hear this podcast. Hopefully. Anybody who has recordings of guy singing and can
It's called Hey. I think it was Hope. That was on the name of it. Project 127. Hope.
Project 127.
Yeah, that was the name of it, but.
Well, any listeners out there, if you have recordings,
we'd love to see you.
Yes, yes. I in particular would, sure. Okay, so again, as you're going through that at the orphanage, and you're part of now this choir, and they basically, I feel like it was a big field trip for you guys to come to the United States and tour around and sing, and it was this glamorous trip, right, that was going to be had. Kind of take us, again, I'm coming at this from a parent's perspective, but take us through that steps of the time when you go to your dad and say, I'm 8 years old or 7 years old at this point, however old you were, and I'm going to go to the United States, and I'm going to tour around, and I'm going to sing. What was his reaction to that?
So
what was the process of him letting you go? Did he have to have, you'd have to have his permission again? What was that like?
Well, that's a short answer to that question, because He didn't have a say. This was a decision I made when it was between, do I go to Dominican Republic with him or do I stay in the orphanage?
So he came home and you were gone?
I don't know. After he left, that was the last time I had seen him until the adoption process, which was like
later. So take us through that then.
So coming through, like, before my dad left, and like I said before, there was like the whole process of whoever was meant to stay in the orphanage, and I wasn't one of them at first. So like when I was talking to him, and he was telling me like he's gonna be leaving, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna stay here. And it was like, okay, you can stay or you can come with me. And I know probably gonna go to the Dominican Republic and try to make it, become a mechanic or whatever. But I like taking leap of faith. So I just was like, I'll stay. So when I stayed and decided to stay and stay in the orphanage, I didn't talk to anyone else. There wasn't like any family member.
So you never left there.
So
you never left the orphanage.
Because
your house was gone. Your dad just
House was there, but I didn't go home. Like none of us went home. And if we did, it was just like some of them just to see their families, because like whoever was left. But we would go to school and come back to the orphanage instead, because like that was like basically our forever home after we left our homes. So there wasn't so much like I went to anybody and said, hey, this is what's going to happen, because we didn't even know what was happening. So I'm going to speak for myself, because some of them probably did, but I didn't even know. I just thought we were going to Port-au-Prince. Like, I didn't know we were going to the United States. I don't remember any of the stuff, because I was very young, as you can see in that picture that I posted with me smiling so hard. But it wasn't really much a conversation that was had with anybody. Mm-hmm. Life just happened, and...
So then I guess
I just went
at some point there was the adoption process that came about. And I'm assuming that at some point somebody had to go to your dad and say, yes, we'd like Jean-Claude to become part of our family.
Yes.
And a United States citizen. Was he resistant to that?
No.
Do you think that's because you had already been here and he had seen the opportunities that you were being given?
I don't think he really saw anything pertaining to knowing much, because we didn't, like, if you were in Haiti or El Paso specifically, you didn't really know much about the U.S. You just knew the U.S. was way better, and it was like, that's where everybody wanted to go. But I think my dad was just like, yeah. So I think it was just more so, I do remember him asking me, do I want to? I've always been given a choice at such a young age. Mm-hmm. So it's not even so much that he wanted to, but I think he just knew that it was going to be a better life for me than he was, because it wasn't so much so he was providing it, because I didn't. Once my dad went to Dominican Republic, I hadn't seen him until the adoption process started.
Does that time period look like?
It was probably 2 years or even more, or if not more, since I had like last seen him. So like, I don't know how they tracked him down and he was able to come to Port-au-Prince and like they were able to coordinate all that. But my dad is awesome. Like, I don't want anybody out there to think that he's a terrible person for everything he did. I think he made the right decision, because I have the best life that I could have right now because of that decision. I know it wasn't easy. It wasn't like he said, well, just go. But I know it was something that he had to think about, and he wanted to know. Because I do remember him crying when he was leaving, but it wasn't even so much so. To me, I had all the experience, like, being here, so I was like, oh, shoot, I get all this, this, and that. My little mind didn't really think much about what it meant.
Not his losses,
no. But the more I'm talking about it right now, actually, I'm starting to understand a little bit more about it. But he wasn't...
Because as we're going through that, we're talking about how you lost your mother,
right,
and then your brother, and then all of a sudden you're saying, I want to leave too, and I want to go to the States. So I was just thinking,
would it be more resistant? But I think because he knew, because of the life he was able to provide for me, he knew it was not going to be as good of a life as I would have here. So I think it was the best decision for me, knowing that everything was going to be a lot better. Mm-hmm. So,
and that maybe someday you'd come back, or
Yeah.
See him, however, take him with your journey.
However he saw it, I'm not sure, but I know he made that decision to give me a better life. And
that might be part of your journey too.
And that is, okay. Yeah. So yeah. We'll see. I think there's a long way to go.
You got them deep questions. That's deep. That's deep right there. And this is another question that's come up by one of your viewers. You have talked about being in therapy and that's helped you and you're still in therapy to try to develop and find out who you are or your purpose and to not feel so much as the outcast, but just to, I guess, bring meaning and understanding to your life and purpose and mm-hmm. wrap some things in, you know, up for you. How has that experience changed your life or your outlook going forward?
So I think that is when it comes to going to therapy, I know it's been a stigma that's been putting on everybody, especially men or especially black men, about like not wanting to go to therapy because you feel weaker or it makes you this and that. And I did not want to go to therapy for like ever because I felt like I was fine because it's, as I've learned in therapy that because I was always just trying to go, like I've made it through so much of my life by myself. Even if there was people around, my mindset was always, it's you. You got to make it happen for yourself.
Think you go to the next thing because you're under that mindset of, I've got to make it?
Mm-hmm. That's how I always was. So going to therapy have helped me.
By making it, I mean, like we've talked about prior in this conversation, making it to go back to hating and say, look, I made it. But what is really making it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, but therapy have helped me understand so much about myself because of therapy. Everybody is listening to my story right now. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't go to therapy, I probably wouldn't have even started my podcast because I didn't really feel as if there was anything that was needed. But after going for as long as I've been going, it's just helped me understand energy, my outlook on life, who I am, and who and how much the people around me actually cares about me, because I didn't really see it that way because a lot of things that just let fly by. But I have become I'm making it my life mission to become an advocate for the mental health and therapy because it's something that is, I think everybody needs and everybody would benefit from.
There's a mental health crisis in the United States.
And I think everybody would benefit from. But when it comes to being in my position and people that are adopted specifically, I think mental health is huge and nobody really talk about it. Nobody really touch on that because you don't really see, especially interracial adoption, because there are a lot of things that you feel you're afraid to talk to your parents about.
So the only time
you feel comfortable to talk about it is to somebody that is strange, like a stranger, not strange, somebody that's like a stranger to you. Mm-hmm. So there are times where you just, I'm going to speak for myself. There are times where I just feel like I don't know if I should say this or like how it's going to be received. Mm-hmm. And at times knowing that.
Just because you don't want to hurt feelings?
Yes.
Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So much so because you don't want to hurt feelings. But then also, since we're being truthful and I am putting my whole self out there and being vulnerable, I'm okay with it. It's just, you just don't know how it's going to be received. Mm-hmm. Also, just knowing like certain things, it's hard to talk to like your parents about, especially when it's like interracial. And there was a lot of things that was happening more recently with things that I was starting to understand when it comes to like racism in general.
Do you think that a lot of that got stirred up when all the things were going on in the United States?
I think it just
the BLM and the movements and things. I'm not the only one.
Right. But then it wasn't even just that. I think I had watched this video and there was this kid who was in foster care and then he ended up being adopted by a white family. And then later on, he eventually reconnected with his biological mom. Mm-hmm. And then like on the video, he was talking about how when he was talking to her, he felt more comfortable being open because his mom can relate. Mm-hmm. But when he was with like his adopted parents, it felt like it's hard to talk to them because you feel like they may not understand because it wasn't something that they've been through or really.
Because there was no biological connection.
Yes. Like. Yes. So, but I think going to therapy have really helped me understand and like open up and be more susceptible. Yes. Mm-hmm. Of everything. But,
Well, I think it's hard too because you don't want to come across as being victimized.
Right? Yes, and that's
it. Because there's many blessings, and so I just know that, and obviously I'm Caucasian myself, and you know our story is unique, our dynamic, our family. We have a very large family and
blended family.
Yes, and so that's a whole other podcast, right?
We can get into that later on.
But you know, when people are asking me about our children, and I don't necessarily explain to them that we have seven kids and two of them are adopted from Haiti. I just see it as seven kids.
Right.
But you wonder that to people, they wonder, well, how did that happen?
Exactly.
You know, and obviously you boys were adopted from when your mom and dad were married.
Right.
So that was a story before my time. But the process in itself sounded, and from what I've heard, like a very difficult one.
It was. And I think they were just, I know there was like a question on there that asked about, I would touch on this a little bit more, but they were just so much that we had to learn. Let me speak for myself, that I had to learn pertaining to just like everything. Cause you got to think about it. It's like taking a plant from its natural environment and put it in a whole different environment that it probably is not supposed to be in a way, and then like now try to adapt to it
and have it flourish.
Right, so now you have everything being thrown at it. It's like, oh shoot, there's rain, there's snow, there's this and that, then it's a plant that's been in the house this whole time. So now when you put it outside, it's like, oh, got to get used to this. But you got to get used to those things and the like as you go and the fly.
Yeah.
So it just was a lot that I think I was talk about like the whole therapy thing. I would just have so much that I was just like holding in, and I've just been a people person. Like I just want everyone else to be happy, even if it cost me mine at times. That
if it cost you your own happiness.
Yes. So at times.
People pleasing.
So I just was like, I finally decided it was time for me to go to therapy and really understand myself.
Yeah.
So and it was probably like I was saying yesterday, it's probably like the best decision I've made because. The me that's talking to you right now is leaps and bounds over the me that was probably talking to you like months ago.
Yeah.
So.
And I think too, you know, part of the question that, and we know that even here in the United States, foster care system is a very broken system in itself. The process to become a foster parent is.
It's
extremely ridiculous, in my opinion, to be, I think it's what, something like a year before you're certified to care for a child.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that would get revised. However, with that being said, I'm assuming the same process is still so for adoption, right?
I believe so.
And
yes. And
coming from, you know, Haiti,
a
third world country where there's a lot of corruption. From what I heard, you know, just from government-wise and stuff, it's kind of everything's done on a promise and a handshake.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing when you're dishing out thousands of dollars, right? So do you, I guess part of your movement are things going forward when you're talking about advocating for adoption and foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be part of your process in explaining or trying to find ways to simplify those processes for families, hopefully?
I've actually started working with this agency to put like celebration boxes together. They call it celebration boxes. At first, my original idea that I had was, but they already had it implemented, was I was like, I wanted to like work with an agency and get like every month do like a birthday box for whichever kid's birthday it is. But they decided that it'd be better to do it whenever and for any type of occasion, so like any celebration, like, oh, you got an A on your test today, here you go, proud of you, like keep working hard and like an incentive.
How do you get those to Haiti? Would you
it's not in Haiti, so
it's
here
Haiti.
It's here.
Oh, it's here in the
it's
United
here
States,
that
right?
I've been working with, but I don't really have any contact with any type of agency or anything that's working in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal since I got adopted was to go back to Haiti and build an orphanage. That's my goal. That's my end goal. Before I die, I hope
that a lot of the kids that came over and were adopted would be right on board with you and it really helped change their lives as well.
Yeah, so I think that's my biggest goal that I would say is not even really so much about even getting a lot of money or anything like that. It's just to go back and give back. But
do you know if that orphanage is still going over there?
I don't think so. Actually, it's not. I know if it is, it probably is under a whole different group of people. But where we were at first, like in my hometown, after we left, like the house was just there. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody, and I think that
it
wasn't occupied. So then we went to a whole different city, and I don't know what that house is being used for, but I know the other kids that basically like aged out, they're like on their own doing their own thing now. So I know it's not, I know it's not running anymore. And if it is, it's probably like in a whole different way than what it was. But I know there would be some people that'd be willing to help. But I think I'm just still trying to put my processes together and figure things out myself.
Down the road.
It's just, I have too many big things in my head.
That's part of the question, too, is where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
In the next 10 years, ooh, man.
I mean, is it something like that? Is that the next big thing on your docket? Or is it just living life here and trying to figure out where you're
going? I would love to be able to go back there in at least in the next 10 years to have at least that process started and helping out as much as I can. I would love to by the next 10 years to have that orphanage built. But I know it's going to take a lot, so it might take longer. It might take however long it takes, and that's all in God's hands. But I don't know. Seeing myself, like, I decided after certain like events that's happened in my life to live a little bit more in the present and not think so much about my future, because
very stressful
because I start to think so much about it that I forget, like, for example, I'd be like, man, I can't wait for tomorrow because this is gonna happen tomorrow, and when I get to tomorrow and that thing is happening, I'm looking forward to the next day, and without realizing that I'm living in that day that I was so excited to be in. So I just decided for myself that it'd be best to live in the present, not so much about like where what's gonna happen next. So in the next 10 years,
did you dream that you would be where you are now? Like, did you see yourself evolving to this, or did you see like getting to the point where you are now?
No, I didn't see myself in any way telling my life story to basically help other people be comfortable and open to telling their story and live out their truths and basically get rid of all this weight that's on their shoulders, because I know that's what it was like for me. I just felt like there was so much I was just holding in and so much I was just carrying.
Just let everybody know that there's times where I felt like I didn't belong here.
Right, and it's okay, because your life is not always going to be great and everything's not always going to be perfect, but you just got to pick up those pieces, put them together, and move on and just create what you want to happen next. But no, I didn't see my life where it is right now, to be honest. And
how is your life right now? Are you happy with your life?
I'm very happy. My energy level have been in a million, and like positive energy. And this podcast have helped in a lot of ways. And like, I went to therapy yesterday, and it just was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was like the best session I've had in a long time. So
I still play soccer
every now and then, like every Monday and Tuesday nights, and my Sunday league is starting. That's like another thing that makes me really happy. And but if anybody that's listening and you're thinking about going to therapy and you're afraid, you don't have to talk to anybody about it. Just do it. Just take that first step, because once you go in there, you'll realize how much it's helping you. You realize how much weight that's being lifted off your shoulder. So I do plan on making a whole segment about, mental health and therapy and all that. But you might hear me say a lot more because I believe it'll help each and every one of us.
It's like having a secret best friend that nobody knows about.
Exactly. So exactly. I think everybody should consider it. And if you have any questions about it, please let me know, because I'll put you in contact with my therapist, and she would be glad to answer any questions about anything anybody have. So, I'm very happy. And this podcast have brought me a lot of joy in seeing people that, you know, reached out to me and tell me how inspired they are by the things that I'm doing. And, it's crazy because I feel like I've already met my goal as to what the point of the podcast was. My goal was, even if I inspire just one person to just feel like they're enough,
like their story enough is for not me.
It means a lot more than you just think. But and every one of us, right? Exactly. Every one of us have a story. And I think I don't want that to be like special people. No, this podcast is not made for just people that are adopted. No, this podcast is made for people that feel like
people
you may not
people.
Feel, exactly. So it was like, if you feel like you're going through something, if you need to talk to somebody, just feel, don't feel like you putting all your weight on someone else. And it's okay to have bad days, because we all have bad days.
I think it's important to keep the faith and prayer and keeping God first in your journey and trusting that process too.
Yep. So it's just a lot that I know we all go through. And we all have our own demons, our own battles we're facing, but I don't want anybody to feel like they're taking it on by themselves, because mental health is real. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I would like my journey is to, like, I figured out my why, and this is my why.
Yeah. We're excited. We're excited that you're, going through that. And I think, you know, going through the rest of these questions here, we've touched on a lot of them, but one thing that we, and I'm going to kind of skip ahead to your high school days / even maybe some into college real quick, so we can end it on a positive beat here, an upbeat beat. So let's talk a little bit about your football journey. Ooh. And I know that probably has, I remember it really took a toll on you physically.
Yes.
Remember that. But some of the highlights, I mean, I know that when I met you, you were still at Lake Norman Charter.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and just you as one of our children, you're one of those kids that just, you walk in a room and it lights up and everybody's excited to see you.
Aww, you're just, look at you saying all these nice things about me.
you're just very charismatic. So I know that it was the same. Oh, I think, anyways, that it was the same for you with children, and that you're just so lovable and likable. And so one of those, give me that highlighted moment for you in football for high school. Let's talk
football
about,
wise, high school.
One of the questions, for example, is what was your longest field goal that you ever kicked?
The highlight of my high school career with football wise, I know it was like my sophomore year when I was like the second leading scorer on the team as a kicker. I was like, how am I doing?
You set records, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I was like probably the first kicker to do a lot of things in my high school. They might not hold the right. They didn't probably put the records anywhere, but I just knew it. But yeah, my longest field goal in practice was a 60-yard field goal, but in the game was 51. But there were times I was football. It was just like everything else in my life, like just a learning curve. A lot of things I had to learn, and something that a lot of people don't know is I didn't really have a coach, like a kicking coach. So everything about football that I did was like on my own, just naturally from soccer. So mm-hmm. I was blessed with the ability to kick a football really far. So I thank God for that. And at times there were times where I was like, man, I wish you'd just give it to someone else, but not me. Because it wasn't my passion.
Oh, yeah.
If it wasn't, like, because I knew my capabilities, the things I was capable of doing, if it was my passion, I believe in the fact that I'd be further
so
with
you
it.
Continued on,
and probably be somewhere people can see me on TV. But it wasn't my passion, and I'm not going to go back and, you know, and wish on nothing. Because the only thing you're going to do is just stop today and just to look back on yesterday. Nah, I ain't got time for that. Nah.
So I guess also when you were talking to, and again, this may go into the 10-year plan, but one of the last questions I have here is when you become a pilot, or if you ever decide to take that journey, where's the first place you'd want to go and why? And if you had to choose, where would that be? Like, everybody wants to know, what's the dreams of John Quad? Like, now that we're now that we're getting through some of this stuff, talk to us a little bit about some of the things you've thought about. Surely you've thought into the future.
Yes, I have. When I do become a pilot, not if. I don't know. But I know some of the places I would love to go would be Greece, Brazil. For sure home. For sure home. I want to go home. As in Haiti, for anybody that don't know. But I want to go home. And that, those are like some of the places I've thought about. But if it's something that do happen, I mean, not if, when it does happen, I would like to make a career out of it. So I just want to travel. And that's been my, like, one of my biggest thing too, is I just want to travel because I just love traveling. Like, I drive to New York to go visit my cousins. I just love traveling. So I do see myself.
Well, you've had some great trips even with your mom. Road
yes, trips yes,
mom.
Yes. We had a road trip all the way to Portland because she's a travel nurse now. But it's just been, and with football also. But I just love seeing new places and seeing new things and experiencing different environments. So I don't even know where exactly, but there's a home for sure. Greece is one of the places I've always looked at and be like, oh my gosh, it's beautiful.
You're going to take mothership though.
Yeah, we'll think about it. but yeah, it's just been, I'm not sure.
Maybe that'll be part of the next podcast.
Probably next time. We'll probably start writing some things down and figure out.
Well, because I'm sitting here and I'm listening, and to all everybody listening, I had said to Jean-Claude, I was like, wait a minute. You done wrapped your life up in four episodes. Like, there has got to be more. You know, as we're listening to these podcasts and stuff, we're trying to probably all put ourselves in your position. Yeah. I know I am.
Yeah.
What it must be like to come from being, in a sense, that scared little boy in Haiti to the confident man you are today. And I know I'm so proud to watch just what I've watched over the last 7-8 years with you growing into the man you are. And I can't wait to see how this podcast develops.
Yeah, it's just been, I think we're going to wrap up my life story for a little bit. But
what comes next? Like, what's the next big thing for this podcast?
Well, with, my goal is to interview people that feel, or not even so much feel, but that has a story to tell and inspire others. And that's the sole goal of me continuing with this podcast is I do have, like, we have plenty of kids in our family that's been adopted.
Yes, we do.
And my goal is to put each and every one of our stories out there, because even if we might have been in the same place at the same time, we still saw things differently and probably experienced things differently.
And had so, different families.
And exactly. So my goal is to share each and of our stories because we are a blended family. And that's what I want to do with this podcast. But I think I don't want any – one of the things that I don't like – is when people be like, oh, dang, I feel so bad for you. Because I don't ever want anybody to feel bad for me, because if I didn't go through everything I went through, my life wouldn't be the way it is. It'd be a completely different. I probably wouldn't met all the people I've met. So I don't ever want anybody to be like, dang, look at JC, man. But nah, because look me. I'm like,
we've talked about that before. Right. Everything happens for
the confidence level is through the roof. Yes. I've been blessed with so many, like, much more than I can, you know, account for. I have some amazing people in my life, and it's just, my life is just getting better from here. So, that's about it. So if there's no more questions, we're going to have to end it with.
You'll let us know though about your next podcast and who's maybe going to be on the other end of this microphone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have, I have plans on who to have on here next. And
and if somebody wants to reach out to you after this podcast and have any further questions, how can they do that?
You can. So if you go on wherever you listen to it, you can leave a review pertaining to the questions. Even if you don't have any questions and you've been enjoying this podcast, please do leave a review.
Because the review helps.
It helps a lot. Yes, it helps a lot with pertaining to basically putting it up there and in the ranks for other people to see. Mm-hmm. To help
moves
other
it up
people.
The total
yes,
goal,
yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it moves it up, and also it just will help me understand that it just gives me a little bit more joy when I know I've helped people. Yeah. It makes me excited. So if you have any questions, like, you can reach out to me through any of my social medias, and I go by JC Brooks. So if you look up JC Brooks and you see the black kid smiling really hard, that's me. You'll see it. But, yeah, so if there's any questions or anything else, please don't hesitate to reach out. Also, if you would like to tell your story, please go ahead and let me know, because I'm not the one to determine if it's amazing or not. That's you. And I believe everybody has an amazing story. And so please do reach out. And like always, I appreciate each and every one of you for listening. And I appreciate you for,
being on
here and asking all these questions. This one is awesome. This actually has been the longest one, even though you thought it was going to be short.
Right. We got people
having, it's like a TV series. Yeah, so we're very excited. I'm for sure very excited for what's to come with this podcast. And I think the point of me telling my story wasn't just to tell people about me. It was more so to allow people to feel comfortable. Because I've ran through the situation where I've talked to somebody and then they're like, "Well, you're adopted, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And it's something I'm proud to say, because I mean, life is good. Everything is, it's not like it's anything negative. And they're like, "Oh, me too." Then they just tell me the story and they're like, "Yeah, you're the first person I've said this, this and that to." It's not because I'm anything special, but because once they realize that there isn't really much that's different than me and them, they're like, "Oh, shoot, well, I can tell him because he can relate." And so that's why I wanted to put my story out there and help people feel like it's all right. It might be hard right now, but just take the time. Remember that you matter. Remember that your mental health is important. That's the biggest one for me. Your mental health is really important. And you may not think that it's as bad. It's not that bad, because, man, I'll just get sad here and there. No, I used to just be like just depressed just by sitting here and just like at times I'd be sad and not know why. But now I'm learning why. And I would love to help each and every one of you. It's OK to go to therapy. I'm going to say it again. It's OK. It will not hurt you in any ways. Actually, will help you in every way. So thank you for listening to The Outcast. I appreciate you. I love each and every one of you. And I love you. Thank you for coming on. And that's it. Thank you. Oh, wait. Have a great day.